The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends are prohibited, and travel between regions should be avoided. In red zones, it's also forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
You need quality sounds? Tune into CKUT 90.3 on the Frequency Modulation Band Radio. www.ckut.ca on the internet. Streaming audio, archive shows, and information.
CKUT.
Welcome to Dragonroot Radio, feminist waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragonroot Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragonroot understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
You're listening to Dragonroot Radio. On today's show, we speak with one of the organizers of No Climate Justice Without Social Justice on their recent webinar series, An Environmental Manifesto. A little later on in the show, we chat with Asami Martins, the founder of Our Colorful Yoga, an organization that centers BIPOC yoga and mindfulness practitioners in Montreal. But first up is our chat with No Climate Justice Without Social Justice.
For our listeners, can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about the organization?
So I define myself as a decolonial feminist activist. I've been involved in anti-racist and decolonial movements, at first in the anti-Israeli apartheid movement, and then against Islamophobia in the feminist movement, intersectional feminist movement, against Bill 21, and lately in the climate justice movement. I've been involved also in the student movement for against climate crisis, and also in at XR. And now, because I couldn't find this point of view that I'm trying to put forward in the pas de justice climatique sans justice sociale that we've created, we started the XR Justice Yodiage, which is an independent organization from XR Quebec, and where we put forward the decolonial, anti-racist perspective into the climate justice movement. So about Pas de Justice Climatique sans Justice Sociale movement, it's really started from an initiative of Climate Justice Montreal. They wanted to create sort of a Green New Deal decolonial, anti-racist for Montreal. So to address the critique of not including the social justice movements into the environmental movement. So it started like that, but it became really completely detached and independent from climate justice. So some members from Climate Justice Montreal started to reach out to social justice movement. A lot of people, as myself, that are not part of Climate Justice Montreal started to create this solidarity movement, and the goal is to create a convergence. I don't know if it's we can say it in English, but in convergence des luttes, so we can address all the roots of the climate crisis that are, of course, first and foremost, colonialism, anti-racism, capitalism, and all form of discrimination and oppression. And really, the idea is to recognize the inequalities, the consequences that are affecting minorities that are affected the global south and the indigenous communities here on unceded lands, and to also have a bigger picture of what is climate injustice, and to really have more creative solutions to address the climate injustice.
Awesome. And I think we'll talk a little bit more about the manifesto a little later on, but as you mentioned, one of the group's intentions is to bring light to the fact that climate justice creates injustice and uneven, or the climate crisis, I should say, climate crisis creates injustice and uneven impact on people. Can you explain or speak a bit to what this means and how the mainstream environmental movement lacks this message?
Yeah, sure. So maybe it will be more easy to understand if we get back 2 years ago when we witnessed the phenomenal rise of environmental movements, including the student movement. And we've seen the sense of urgency that they carried. And this urgency has really raised the complexity of the issue, which is not only capitalism, but also above all of it, colonial and racism. Colonialism and racism. So we didn't realize how much the climate crisis is having a completely disproportionate effects, first between the South and the North, but more importantly here, the catastrophic effects on Indigenous people. So even in the cities, population are not affected in the same way. The neighborhoods that are mostly inhibited by socially marginalized people, especially Black people, people of color, they are experiencing the consequences in a strong way, not only because of pollution and the quality of air, but also because the environment in which these people live, the state of their streets, their homes, the accessibility to parks, grocery stores, fresh food, libraries, museums, everything. And in fact, the accessibility to all kind of basic services. So climate justice goes even further from the environmental racism that I just described. It rejects all systems of exploitation that have been at the root of the climate crisis. And that means It completely breaks with the colonialism and the racism that have exploited not only the land, but also the bodies of people that have been racialized. And we can also see climate justice as being opposed to police violence, to control of bodies. Like myself, I see climate justice opposing Bill 21, because Bill 21 is in fact controlling bodies of racialized women. It's also opposed to migration injustices, the control of people without status, their dehumanization, So, of course, climate justice fights against poverty, austerity, and all capitalism enterprises of government to enrich the rich at expense of the living condition of the population. But it is, let's not forget that capitalism was a product of colonialism and racism.
Well said. There's a webinar series starting tomorrow that goes through so many of these themes and topics. Can you tell us a bit more about how the webinar series came together and how it's been organizing it?
So first, the idea was to create the movement. We thought that we can create a sense of unity by creating a collective document where we can gather all the claims and call of justice from all the different social justice group. So this was the idea we begin with to create the movement. And then we decided to create the series first to address the people, the environmentalists, especially on their blind spots about the climate justice and the environmentalism, and also to engage people in the document. So we're gonna have a release today or tomorrow on social media to so we're gonna just share our Google Doc document and ask people to add their claims, and we hope we will be ready to have an official release on April, so we can really come up with a document that we can build on our movement. And really, the series that's gonna last like few months hopes to mobilize as much as social justice movement as possible to engage in the document, but also create any other initiative that can create solidarities between the groups and like reinforce the movement.
Obviously, the overall theme of the webinar series is the bridging of environmental justice and social justice. But can you tell us a bit more about the events in the series and how these sub-themes were selected and why they're important to talk about?
Really, the themes were, we thought about them, but of course, it's not gonna talk about all the issues we wanna talk, because of course, 6 webinars is very limited. But we also created like a connection between all the series, like all the webinars from the series. So it's not like it didn't come from nowhere that we started with a webinar on indigenous struggles, and then we go with the migrant justice, then we go with the police brutality and all security issues, and then we go with the racism and environmental racism, and then healing, and then we go back to the idea of convergence. So there is really a fil conducteur. I don't know how to say it in English, but like a conduct line.
Yeah,
I don't know if we can say that. Mm-hmm. Between the webinars, and it's really was thought as a series that can make people reflect between the webinars and really also follow the idea and the coherence in our our principles, our view, vision of the climate justice.
I love how that thread is so clear now that you've mentioned it. Ending with the theme of healing, can you speak a bit more to that and the kind of ending on a note of healing or hope and why that might be?
Yeah, so we can see that the notion of mental health is becoming more and more important and getting more and more attention about in our societies, especially with the crisis. And we do want to talk about the crisis, like the pandemic, and how it affected the movements, how it's really make it more difficult. It exacerbated the issues that we are living. So we do want to talk about this kind of issues related to the pandemic, but largely we want to speak about the effects also of the crisis and all the crises, like the social crisis that we are living even before the pandemic. Like, let's say the impact of racism and the intergenerational trauma that a lot of rationalized youth and people in general are carrying because of slavery, colonialism, because of immigration, and really horrific immigration stories. The parcours, I don't know how to say it in English. So it's really to address the effects of systems of exploitation into the mind, and I'm particularly really interested in that because I myself studied psychology. I'm applying to do my PhD. I started like some classes, and I really want to also orient my formation, my training in this direction. Speaking of the all social components and the socio-political context and how it affects deeply our mind, our well-being, our capacity to function, all of it. And we don't speak about it enough. Like, the society is not taking this in consideration. They want to put like some hotlines in available to the people, but they don't want to address systemic issues. They don't want to relieve people from the racism they are living, the violence they are living. Women have still have to live the harassment and without any type of punition, like there is nothing done for men that harass women, and there is nothing done for the homeless that are now doubly punished because they don't have a roof. There is nothing done for the survivors from police brutality or the families that have lost children because of police brutality. All these kind of issues that are really in the roots of our condition, our psychological condition and well-being. So this is basically what we want to speak about during the series and the webinar, and we hope we're gonna let you know what are gonna be our guests very soon.
You just mentioned some announcement of speakers. Are there any any of the speakers or events that you're most excited for, or can you tell us a bit more about what people can expect from the webinar?
I think first, people gonna expect to see people that were never thought of being part of the climate justice movement. I feel like maybe the first webinar gonna be, it's gonna be obvious for people to discuss about decolonialism because, you know, land defenders, they are protecting the lands and the water and everything. So this start to make sense for people. But the more we're gonna go into the series, the more people would realize a lot of things that will have excluded from the movement, and that's what we're trying to do from both sides. It's gonna be from the side of environmentalists who think because of the sense of urgency that it is too heavy to carry the anti-racist movement. It's gonna, we are in emergency and it's really gonna destroy the movement. And from the sides also of these people from the social justice movement who do not see themselves in the climate justice movement because they never also had the chance to be in it. Like, we see a lot of discrimination in the environmental movement. A lot of racialized people quit, as myself, these spaces because they are not inclusive, and also they do not share the vision that we have. So we really hope that we're gonna also attract people that struggle with anti-racism to this movement, so they can take the place, the space that we have, that we want to create to them, and put them in the center of the movement. And that's what we're really trying to do. We try to center the margins and put all these very, very marginalized people from the society, but from the movement, the environmental movement, we're trying to put them in the center of the movement and put their needs in the center of the movement as well. And try to call upon especially white people to be allies of the movements and leave the leadership of the movement to indigenous people and black people and people of color, and not to give them all the responsibility of the struggle we carry. But to be an ally means that you give the space, give the mic, and put the needs of the people that are the most marginalized and the more affected by the climate crisis in the center of the movement. And that's really what we're trying to do.
So if people want to learn more, if they want to attend the webinar or check out the manifesto, where can they go?
So we have the event on Facebook. It's going to be live streamed. Well, we're trying to have the webinar, like all the series, in both colonial languages. And because of our very limited capacity, we couldn't have more languages and translations. But so we're going to have two languages to reach out to the maximum people we can have, and they're gonna be mostly in French, but the first one gonna be in English, and there's gonna be in translation in French, so people that do not understand English at all can connect to the Zoom link that we put already in the event, and people that understand English will follow on the live stream. And we're gonna put all the webinars available on our Facebook page. It's gonna be live streamed. They will be able to listen to it after, if they are not available at the moment we live stream. And yeah, I hope for the accessibility, we can we can relieve as much obstacles as possible.
Thank you so much again for taking the time today and speaking with me. I hope the event...
You're listening to Dragonroot Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. You just heard our interview with No Climate Justice Without Social Justice on their recent webinar series, An Environmental Manifesto. Up next is our chat with Asami Martins, the founder of Our Colorful Yoga, an organization that centers BIPOC yoga and mindfulness practitioners in Montreal.
Asami Martins. I am a Japanese immigrant living in North America for 17 years. And I've been teaching yoga for 11, practicing for 14. And I've been publicly speaking about the importance of representation in yoga community for the past 1 year. I'm very passionate about that.
So you organized a workshop back in the fall, I believe September, called Yoga for Diversity and Inclusion. Can you tell us a bit about what the intention behind this project was and how it was received?
So the intention to host the event is to start a conversation. I travel to the U.S. often for yoga teacher trainings, and my teacher, Amy Polizzi, she often talks about the inequality and lack of representation in yoga community. And I noticed that in Montreal, that wasn't the case. So I thought, why not to bring the conversation to our city so that people become aware of this issue? It was received well, I hope, and I think, I believe. But it was the moment that I noticed that, or I recognized that we just hit the tip of the iceberg. There's so many conversation and so many layers to kind of go through. I was talking about diversity in terms of race, but there is a diversity in bodies, ability in our bodies, with our bodies, and also accessibility in finance as well. Mm-hmm. So even though I brought the conversation for race matter, but it brought curiosity to me to look deeply into these matters as well.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the takeaways that you got from those conversations?
I think people took away the fact that this is just the beginning, mm-hmm. and the conversation is ongoing, and this is not something that we can fix it right away. So that's why at ESPA Vrana, there's a studio in St. Henry, they created, they organized another event for yoga in accessibility. And then they weren't only talking about race, because for me, because I am an immigrant from Japan and I'm a community member of BIPOC. So for me, the matter of race is important, but for others, it opened up the conversation for other things.
Mm-hmm. So many yoga studios have missions or pillars around being accessible. Yet despite these intentions, how do you think studios or yoga spaces create barriers for both teachers and students of color?
That's a great question. I find when you look at the marketing in social media or mainstream media, when you think of yoga, there's a stereotypical image that we can quickly identify, which is white, skinny, able-bodied people or women mm-hmm. in general. So when you look at that for a moment as a person of color, there's a slight hesitant feeling that it comes up, is it for me? Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing is how the media or how yoga studios market what yoga is for the population. And also, because of the mainstream or the stereotypical image of yoga, when there is no representation, it's so hard to believe that I could be a yoga teacher, right. You know, or I'm invited into the space to practice. I think a lot of people, I hope people know that yoga comes from India, rather than just a way to move our body and get fit and get flexible. And when we look into yoga philosophy, it's so obvious that the practice is for everybody. But I think for Black Indigenous people of color, like person of color myself, it was really hard to believe that this is something that I could practice too. Mm-hmm. So, and also, yeah, I think the representation, I always come back to representation, how the media is portraying what yoga is. And because of that, it's hard for yoga teachers to believe, person of color, yoga teachers to believe that it could be us. And the same for student as well. Like, is it accessible for us to go in? Is it safe space for us to go in? Mm-hmm. Is it welcoming if we don't fit into the category of what yoga should look like?
You've also shared, speaking of representation, you've shared on social media a Canadian BIPOC yoga and meditation teachers directory, as well as a graph, which I thought was really interesting, of studios in Montreal that shows a picture of Black Indigenous people of color yoga teachers at each studio in Montreal. Can you elaborate a bit more on what the impact could be of more diverse hiring at yoga studios? And again, why representation is particularly important in yoga or wellness spaces?
That's a big, like, chunk of question. So I find it's like chicken and an egg kind of thing. Like, do we need to hire more yoga, BIPOC yoga teachers so that people will feel invited to come to the yoga spaces? And or is it like, do we need to go into BIPOC communities to welcome them into our communities? But it's really hard, because even though we have good intention for marketing or like giving scholarship for BIPOC yoga teachers, if the studio owners or yoga teachers in the individual, if they haven't learned about their privilege or implicit bias or prejudices that they have, it's really hard for BIPOC to go into a yoga studio, right? So regardless of all of that, I think the most important thing is self-study, and that's something that we learn in yoga, Swadhyaya, to go into to ourselves so that we can learn about our bias. Mm-hmm. Biases. I mean, I think more than anything, hiring yoga teachers or whatnot, I think that's the most important thing to do. Mm-hmm. I think can I give an example?
Of course, yeah.
So one of my friends, she just messaged me one of the advertisements, and then it was like a giveaway. Mm. And then the picture was an Asian person doing yoga. And then in the comments of like giveaway, like yoga session, blah, 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 I saw the names of the yoga teachers who are giving the gift, but they're all white yoga teachers, but they're using Asian person, right, practicing yoga. That doesn't make sense, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how can I relate to someone who doesn't understand how I feel? Or I feel like I've been used, my image or my descent image is used just for advertisement, but there is a lack of connection to that. Mm. So that's why, like, the first, before marketing, before scholarship, before going into the community, truly understanding, it will take, you know, months, a year, never know. Mm-hmm. For white folks to really identify their biases. And then what does it mean for them to have that privilege, right? Because mm-hmm. if they don't do that, like, that advertisement made me really uncomfortable. Yeah. Because they're trying to include, I'm doing quotation marks, people to, you know, join for the giveaway, but they're not understanding what the message underneath by using those images, right?
Right.
So for me, that's why, like, first step is just self-study, learning about white privilege, white supremacy, implicit biases, those things. That's important. And for me, I've been in this industry for 11 years. So, like, when I started teaching, like, when I was one of the only ones. Mm-hmm. You know, I could look around and see, like, how many person of color there, like, usually it's like two or three. Mm-hmm. So by creating BIPOC yoga teacher and meditation teacher directory, I hope that we could find each other and then we could communicate with each other and support each other, because sometimes I felt being the only person of color, I felt lonely. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to shape-shift who I am in order to fit in.
Right.
And that's really taxing for my body and my heart and also my spirit as well. So by creating some a directly like that, it's so nice to kind of make friends, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so why particularly representation? I think people, when we see each other on screen or in person, when you see someone who looks like you, I find there's a sense of belonging. Another example, like 2 years ago, Crazy Rich Asian came out on the screen. I read all the three books. And then that was my first time seeing mostly Asian cast on the screen. Mm-hmm. Like growing up, I grew up in Japan, but whenever I turn on a TV about North American comedy or drama or movies, it was only white people. Mm-hmm. So when I first saw like mostly Asian, like movie, I was like, wow, this is great, you know, because I see myself in there, which means I could be that. Like, I don't have the wish to become an actress or anything, or actor or anything, but I could be one, mm-hmm. right? Like, so that's why I find representation is so important. But representation coming from, like, genuine willingness to have that representation instead of, like, oh, we need to put this person in this video so that people will come. Mm-hmm. Like, rather than a marketing tactic, it has to be a genuine, honest wanting to represent.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask about yoga teacher trainings, because these are one of the ways I think a lot of studios stay alive is through, you know, trainings. In your opinion, what responsibility do these trainings have to incorporate discussions on racism?
I mean, I find it has to be there. It has to include. But I've heard a conversation, like, even though they have equity training or conversation of race, the teacher who is teaching is not BIPOC. Mm-hmm. It's just white yoga teacher teaching about race or about inequity. Mm-hmm. And I understand that because, you know, people study and people can talk about it. But, like, if you actually want to understand how you feel to be oppressed, if you never experienced that in systemic level, like, how could you talk about it? Mm-hmm. So I think it is so important for yoga teacher trainings to have those talks, but I highly do recommend people to hire a person of color if they feel comfortable to speak about it. Mm-hmm. And I find yoga teacher trainings, 200-hour trainings, is just we have so many things that we have to kind of cramp into that 200 hour. And I always feel it's never enough. And then we put so much emphasis on our physical practice, like how to teach yoga, which is important. But like, if you really look into, you know, yoga philosophy, like it talks about we are one, but like, we could also talk about why we are not one yet. Mm. And I find like yoga teachers who train teachers, they are extremely, I find they have a power and an influence to people. So if they have the platform to talk about things, they should use it. Mm-hmm. And they're leaders of the small communities that we have, right?
All right. So can you tell us about our colorful yoga?
Okay. So as I told at the beginning for my introduction, I've been openly speaking about the discriminations that I experienced in yoga community since 2019. Mm-hmm. And at the end of last year in 2019, I kind of felt like the urge to create something where a person like myself, people like myself can come together and practice yoga together. And this pandemic, like, it kind of really forced me to think that way as well, because as an Asian, this particular experience of pandemic was scary, because I noticed that when I was coming back from Nicaragua in mid-March, I saw that not many people wanted to sit next to me at the airport. And there is a news in Montreal that two Korean Canadian were stabbed on the street because of, again, racism. And I felt like I felt for the couple weeks I was afraid to go outside by myself. And I was feeling a sense of belonging to somewhere, but I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. And when I tuned into a Zoom class during, you know, quarantine, and it's all like yoga teachers, and I'm like, huh, once again. So, and Black Lives Matter movement came in, and I was like, okay, if I'm feeling lack of belonging, and I'm feeling scared, I'm feeling, you know, looking for a community. And then I've been saying that, like, I can't find it. I can't find it. So I was like, why can't I create it? Mm. So I've been in a conversation with Kimiko Tao Fujimoto. She's one of a yoga teacher in Montreal. And we are creating another project. And then this is one of the branch of the project that we're working on together. Our purpose is to bring BIPOC yoga practitioners and meditation practitioners together, and to see each other, connect with each other. But oftentimes, the yoga teachers don't get enough spotlight. So I thought, like, why not, like, introduce them to our community? So, you know, students can get to know each other, and teachers will have more community of people that who are following them and supporting them.
Mm-hmm. If it's not like fully formed yet, don't worry. But do you want to talk about that project with Kimiko, the like broader project?
What we're trying to do is kind of going away from yoga a little bit, but I find sharing stories or writing story is part of wellness practice. Because, you know, in order for us to understand our joy or suffering, we need to hear other people's perspectives. So what we're trying to create is like an online platform where people can share their stories. And then what wellness looks like. Because sometimes, like, wellness, I find it's kind of put it into a box, which sometimes we don't fit in, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's not about only drinking green smoothies or eating salads.
Right.
Yeah. It could be anything, like some Some cultures have, you know, traditional Chinese culture, they have remedies that they drink. And then that's not considered as, you know, like mainstream wellness, mm-hmm. but in their culture, it is, that is mainstream. Mm-hmm. So like, what is our cultural background? It's more like a anthropology writing that we want to do. Yeah. So it's coming soon, but it takes some time.
Yeah. With all of this in mind, what do you hope for the future of yoga spaces?
The future of yoga spaces, I hope there is a space that there is a true representation of how we live in our city. Mm. And there is a sense of like warmth and welcoming feeling when we enter the space. And I know studios do offer that, but there is still, there is some, you know, boundaries or barriers that we can't cross yet. I would like to see more of myself as students, and then I would like to see equity in yoga. I would like to see like our practice really deeply rooted in philosophy. Mm. And then I think because if it's rooted in philosophy, everybody can approach it. Yeah. Regardless of race, regardless of the ability in our body, regardless of our socioeconomic status, if it's rooted in that, I believe yoga can be accessible for many populations.
Mm-hmm. To finish, if people want to learn more about you, your projects, or the topics that we're speaking about, where can they go?
So if they want to learn my personal experiences, I openly talk about on my Instagram. I write pretty, you know, informative things. So they can go to Asami Yoga on Instagram. And if you're BIPOC yoga practitioner, or if you'd like to support Our Colorful Yoga, please go to Our Colorful Yoga on Instagram as well. We're currently working on website. Until then, we're going to be just marketing on or sharing our information on Our Colorful Yoga on Instagram. If you want to learn about this matter in particular in yoga, there are fantastic teachers. Mainly they're in the States, but they are talking about it. One is Michelle Cassandra Johnson. She wrote a book, Skill in Action. There's another book called Radical Dharma by Angel Chodo Williams. Those are two books that I would recommend for people to read. You can find all sorts of podcast episodes as well. People can go to Citizen Well podcast, and then they have incredible interviews.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. You just heard our interview with Asami Martins, the founder of Our Colorful Yoga, an organization that centers BIPOC yoga and mindfulness practitioners in Montreal. We're going to finish today's episode with a clip from an interview from Shanice Nicole, a Black feminist educator, facilitator, writer, artist, and author of children's book Dear Black Girls, which was recently released and available at Drawn In Quarterly. This interview took place back in 2016, where Shanice shares a poem with the same title, Dear Black Girls.
Dear Black Girls, all around the world, this one is for you, for us. Dear Black girls, I love the way your black skin wraps itself around you, as if it never wants to let go, as if your color is the richest thing it has ever known. Dear Black girls, I love the way the kinks in your curls twirl, bouncing and free-growing and living naturally. end in locks, and braids or under a wig, or weave, because whatever you choose is up to you, queens. And know that this goes for the rest of your body, and anyone who tells you different doesn't have to live, breathe, be, exist in it. So please let it be known that your body is your own and only yours, dear black girls. Dear black girls, I love the way your forehead takes up space on your face. Strong, big, and wide like the oceans, many of our ancestors survived hard, protecting the wonder that is your mind. Dear black girls, I love the way your lips and mouths are full as if they're already packed with the stories you will share and the tales you will tell as you explore this world we call home. Full as if they're already ready for the battles you'll call your own, ready to fight and laugh and kiss and love and scream and everything else in between you will have to do, because you are a black girl in this world. Dear black girls, I love the way your body curves like your mama's and hers. DNA running through your veins, reminding you each and every day who and what you come from. The where isn't always clear, because the where isn't always known. Our histories aren't always shown. So many stories have been sewn, pieced together and fabricated, and then used as a means of educating little black girls so that you grow up in this world thinking you are not loved. Thinking you are not everything. But dear black girls all around the world, despite all you may feel, think, hear, and or see, know that you are honored, protected, and loved by black girls like me.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks.
So can you tell us a bit about that and maybe what inspired it?
Yeah. I wrote this poem in the summer of 2015 while I was in tears while I was writing. And I was writing it thinking about Dejeria Becton, who is a 15-year-old girl who was assaulted and violently arrested by a cop in McKinney, Texas. I don't know if you remember, there was like a swimming pool party and a bunch of kids were really traumatized and hurt by these cops. So that was really what inspired this poem. And I think especially what inspired was like the silence around this incident. And especially silence from feminists I'm speaking specifically to, which I think is really important, in that this was like a 15-year-old girl who was also in a bikini and was like violently attacked and straddled by like this grown cop. So I think it's important to talk about like the dynamics there, in that if this was a 15-year-old white girl, like first, that cop would be fired. And second, there would be like international outrage, especially from feminists, and there were crickets. So I think this ties back into like when we, like why we have to say Black Lives Matter, is because if we don't, like literally no one else will. So I wrote it for her, and I wrote it for all black girls.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Thank you to all our guests featured on today's show. Be sure to tune in 2 Mondays from now for more reports on gender-based issues.
To make all this summer they fried. Open the door. Seek new world. In here, Security 90.3 FM from Montreal.
Sound.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
More than ever, the simplest gestures are our best protection to fight the virus. That's why we need to continue following basic health measures, such as keeping a 2-meter distance from others, wearing a mask, and washing our hands regularly. Avoid travel and non-essential trips. And if you develop symptoms, be sure to get tested promptly and follow self-isolation guidelines. See all of the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Let's continue to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to Underground Sounds on CKUT, and I'm your host, Nick Schofield, with you every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. playing all Canadian independent music. You are likely listening at either 90.3 FM or online at ckut.ca, and this is the Monday, February 8th, 2021 episode. I've been having such a great time pre-producing these episodes.